Our message is coming back to the middle. Bring people to the middle. Bring people to the table. Let's find true solutions. Let's find accommodations from the left and the right. And those are the votes that we want.
Dr. Raul Garcia, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having me here again.
Yeah, so we've got like, what, days until the election, till ballots go out.
Yeah.
How do you spend the closing stretch?
Trying to get the message out. I am very confident, and we are very confident, that if every voter in the state of Washington knows about us, we'll win the election. That is the obstacle. That is the challenge, to get every voter to know our message. Yeah. We feel that we have a very strong message. We feel that we have one of the strongest messages in the country. But the obstacle is getting to that voter so they have that knowledge.
Yeah. And it's an obstacle for everyone. I think I agree with your assessment in that. I've said before, Maria Cantwell is a ghost for 6 years. Every 6 years she comes back and she does a couple photo ops and stuff. And I think she's just been there so long that people know who she is. But if you really take the time, I mean, I've said if she's milk toast, I mean, I don't see anything particularly spectacular about her as a candidate. So do you think it's just that sort of the name recognition issue that it's like people are just like, meh?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that we have been wired to actually respect career politicians.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, the Seattle Times asked me a question when I interviewed with them. They said, you know, we like you, but why would we give up such a powerful senator? Mm-hmm. And is the ideology that, well, career politicians have power.
Yeah.
And I don't think that our founding fathers wanted that. Mm-hmm. They wanted the bus driver and the teacher and the doctor and the carpenter to go to Congress for a little while, bring their ideology in there, and then go back to their profession.
Well, they should have put term limits in then when they created this country of ours.
Well, we have a great chance to term limit Maria Cantwell here on November 5th.
Term limit after how much money has it been?
24 years. Yeah. 24 years. And, you know, I thank her for her service. Mm-hmm. I don't think public service is easy.
Yeah.
Right? Jess and I are not going to the movies on Saturday night. We are campaigning. We're going to an event. We're calling people. And this is the life of a public servant, but that is the life of a public servant. You should be serving your people. You should be listening to your people and acting as such. And I think that that representation is why I'm here.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel that we have that exact representation that we need. I think that if our senator walks down a street in Seattle, no one would recognize her. And that is a problem. I want to be that senator that everybody recognizes and says, you know, that's Garcia.
Because you're around.
Yeah, that's the guy that comes around. That's the guy that talks to us. We may not agree with him all the time, but he certainly listens. And this is the kind of office that we need out of the U.S. Senate representing Washington.
Yeah, so to get your message out, obviously money's a big factor. But you said, you know, we have a great chance to beat her. To be blunt, numbers don't show that. I mean, the polling has not been great. The primary results were below my expectations, certainly. I'm sure they were below yours. And the fundraising wasn't there even pre-primary. So I know that was kind of harsh, but you know that. I mean, I'm just telling you the truth. So how do you convince donors to give you money given the results of the primary election?
Well, if you look at the primary election and you study it scientifically, if you combine all the Republican votes together, we have about 40%, right? You add to that the fact that about 10 points to 15 points of independents and moderates didn't vote. Mm. They never do in the primary. So you get a jump into the general election. Mm-hmm. And that is our wheelhouse. Our message is coming back to the middle.
Yeah.
Bring people to the middle. Bring people to the table. Let's find true solutions. Let's find accommodations from the left and the right. And those are the votes that we want. And that is why we want that message out there, because we feel that if we get that message out there, all these individuals will vote for us. No question about it.
Oh, I've no doubt. If I listen to you for 5 minutes and listen for me a candle for 5 minutes, there's just no doubt that that would be an obvious choice for especially undecided voters. Reaching them is the key. Do you agree that there's probably some fatigue there for the Republican base having just lost so many damn statewide elections?
Oh, absolutely. I think that there is a lot of fatigue, especially after the last U.S. Senate election, where we had such great hope, and we were beaten. And Reagan said, look, we could surrender and condemn our children to 1,000 years of darkness, or we could keep fighting. And I think that we are at a point in our lives here in the state of Washington where we need to make that decision, where we need to take that leap. And I'm not asking our party to only do that. I'm asking Democrats to do that, independents to do that, libertarians to do that. Because what I see outside my door, I don't like. Mm-hmm. I don't like the crime. I don't like the open drug use. I don't like the fact that our children are not safe. I don't like the fact that we can't afford our lives. I have 4 children that try to put gas every month, and they're calling me for help. Mm-hmm. And there are many families out there that are deciding between groceries and gas. So, you know, if you look at that perspective, people want change. And we actually have a message of change. So that is, again, what we're trying to get out there to donors to help us get this in the next 4 weeks, and we will win the election. We just need to get that message out there.
What are the issues that have been resonating the most with voters as you've gone, seen them face to face?
Well, the economy is certainly a big deal.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to vote on their wallet to be able to live their life with their families. We need to bring this inflation down. We need to make life affordable again for everyday families. And that is not the case right now. That's a big deal. Now, of course, at fentanyl, issue is big for me because I see that is the biggest crisis in America and is almost a biggest silent crisis. But it has affected not only the homeless, but regular families.
Yeah.
You know, our own oldest son, we almost lost to fentanyl. And that is just one story. A lot of people that I talk to tell me the same story, a neighbor, a friend. And this is an attack on America. It is so easily accessible in the streets, and it's 40 cents a pill, right? So why it is so dangerous is because before, to be addicted to cocaine, you needed about $200 a day to stay strung out.
Yeah.
Heroin, maybe $100. Fentanyl, you need $5.
Yeah.
If you have $5, you could stay strung out every day.
Yeah, and you kill out on yourself the street. For a dollar.
And it's roulette because there is no one with quality assurance in these clandestine labs saying, hey, let's make sure we don't put more than 25 micrograms in that pill. No, they could be 2 milligrams and it could kill 10 people. So, and that is what we're facing. And yes, we're going to push that because I think it is to bring America to be healthy again. And as healthy as we want to think we are, we're not. The food we eat, the open drug use in our streets, all this needs to be improved. And then we get to healthcare, right? Which our opponent ran on 6 years ago. We are 50th in the country in healthcare, in medical bed availability. This is embarrassing. So, of course, is my wheelhouse, and I have a lot of solutions that I want to come up. And not only talk about, but make them true. I think people are tired of politicians that just talk about the problems. What are you going to do about it? That was my frustration in some of the debates.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, even stop fighting amongst each other. What are you telling me, the voter, that you're going to do about it? And I'm looking forward to our debate with Senator Cantwell on October 8th.
October 8th, okay.
At Gonzaga. We have another one October 19th at Seattle University that she's still to confirm.
I guess she's waiting to see how October 8th goes.
But I'm looking forward to that because I want to bring a message that is fresh.
Yeah.
I want to tell people what we're going to do. How are we going to change our streets? How are we going to bring down crime? How are we going to stop the open drug use? How are we going to make our streets safe again? How are we going to make our families afford their lives in Washington? How are we going to make healthcare access accessible for everybody? So I want to continue to do as much as I can 24/7 before those ballots drop. And we are optimistic that, you know, when people get their ballots, they will realize, you know, this is the same government that we've had for 24 years. In our governor's race, the same government that we've had for over 40 years.
Yeah.
We need change. If we don't vote for change, we won't have change. And I know that human beings, in human behavior, we don't like change.
Yep.
We like our own little space, where we're used to. But the environment right now is such that it should make everybody uncomfortable.
You would think. You would think there's not much. And we were talking about this before we started recording. It's kind of shocking to me. I can't put myself in the mindset of someone who looks around them and looks at our state and it says, yeah, more of this. That's really hard for me to understand.
I can't fathom that. I don't think that the majority of people that live in this state would ever say that.
Yeah.
They may think, well, we have different agendas, we have different answers, but no one is saying more of this.
Yeah.
They can't.
Well, I think a lot of that's default voting, right? And you get into these patterns of behavior and not everybody's as informed on the issues as, you know, we'd love them to be. So you're really pushing back against the national narrative too and what they're seeing on CNN and MSNBC. And, you know, you have Kamala Harris who is painting, you know, a much different picture of who she is and would be than who she has been under the Biden administration. So, you know, how effective do you think that she is right now at painting it as like, oh, no, the economy's fine and I've got the border under control?
Well, I think that her support has come from the group of people in America that don't want to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
So it's not her per se. It's just not Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why she, I believe that she's getting the support that she's getting. I think that politicians in general, we've come to a place that is very dirty. We've come to a place where they believe that saying a white lie is okay,
mm-hmm.
as long as it gets them elected.
Yeah.
Then they could change it. And this is now the norm in politics. And I think that myself, coming into politics from a scientific mind, it doesn't work with me. There is no accountability. You know, every single patient that I have ever treated in my life is documented.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm accountable for everything that I have done. Why are we not holding politicians accountable for what they do? There's a lot of hearsay and there's a lot of gaslighting in politics. Let's bring it back to what I'd like to do is bring my scientific mind to politics. According to results, this is not working. It's in black and white. You can't argue it. This is not working. We need new things. And these new things will be followed according to results. So I have said, you know, if I am your next, or when I am your next United States Senator, I will push hard to pass the Americans Against Fentanyl Act, which will give felony charges, federal felony charges to drug dealers that are dealing fentanyl.
Amen.
And put them in prison and eliminate the supply. We need to be harsh on the supply. If it's coming from other countries, we need to be harsh on that. Until our streets where the dealer is selling it. All of that, we need to make tough decisions and eliminate that supply so we don't have it in our streets. And then we could turn to the addiction world. And this is where I think we failed in the 1980s in our war against drugs. We criminalized the addiction world a lot. We put a lot of burden on our court system and didn't treat the addiction world as it is, as a medical emergency. Make it mandatory to go to rehab. Make a rehabilitation program that is 6 months, that is comprehensive, that includes mental health, drug addiction, counseling, and even relationships with colleges and businesses that want to take these graduates. But they can't come back to the street and have that dealer there. You have to be harsh on that end. And, you know, according to results, that has worked. In 2001, Portugal did it with the heroin epidemic that they had. The government came in and said, we're going to lose our country. They put dealers in prison. They made it mandatory to go to rehab in Portugal. If you're found with drugs, you go to rehab. There's no other option. Mm-hmm. And they cleaned their streets. So I want to bring that scientific mind to find true solutions that we haven't been able to find. Giving a house to someone that has mental health issues without treating the mental health doesn't work. No. Housing first for drug addicts doesn't work. Now you're infesting your neighborhood with a drug house. Harm reduction. I call it government-approved hospice. I am completely in favor of having Narcan in our streets because it saves lives, okay? Not only the addicts, but it saves the life of that child that tries fentanyl for the first time and it didn't know any better, okay? So I am in favor of that. Where I differ with harm reduction is we need a end point. We need a solution. We cannot enable this program to get bigger, this problem to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what it's had. That's what it's been doing for the last few years, right? So I think that it's time to bring science to politics and actually do things that are effective and get rid of things that are ineffective. You know, Reagan also taught us that there are two ways to increase inflation. You tax people and you print money.
We've done a lot of both of those things.
We are doing a lot of both of those things, yeah. Right? So, no, I want to bring a true solution. I want an audit of the federal government. And that doesn't mean another bureaucratic wing that comes in and audits the... No, I want the single accountant with a pencil behind his ear and his glasses and to audit our budget and say, this program is ineffective. This program is ineffective. Hasn't given us any solutions in the last few years. And bring that money back to the people. Because if we have more money in the community and we share it, that's when growth happens. Economics 101, right? We need to have money in the pockets of the people to be able to afford food and gas and education, which has become now prohibitive for some families.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about the border issue because it's tied to the fentanyl issue in a moment. But we talked about Kamala Harris and you said, you know, the people voting for her are just the people who don't want to vote for Donald Trump, I guess, which is true for a lot of elections. But, you know, I've had the Trump conversation before. He is this sort of lingering question mark for Republican candidates in our state. So has that been a factor as you've gone out talking to voters that they're just not comfortable with him? So they're not comfortable with you?
No, because I have really been very clear that I'm going to stay away from the presidential race. It is the most divisive thing in our country today.
Yeah.
And my job as a U.S. senator is to work with whatever president gets elected.
Yeah.
As long as it's good for the state of Washington. And this is the key. You know, I'm going to be the U.S. senator from the state of Washington, but I need to work for the state of Washington. So I have a fundamental belief that my job is to make the governor of the state of Washington succeed. And Olympia's job should probably be to make the counties succeed.
Yeah.
And the counties, the cities, and so on. Not what we have now. We have a lot of mandates from above that really don't work for the smaller government body. So, yeah, I have stayed away from the presidential election because I want a message of unity. I'm tired of this division where neighbors are not talking to neighbors, even family members are not talking to each other because you're a Democrat or you're a Republican. Well, I can't talk to you. This is ridiculous. You know, when I came to this country from Cuba, I never thought of division. I thought of this, the America. I mean, the Americans are the best.
Yeah.
They're the most intelligent. They're the most innovative. We're always ahead of the world. I can't wait to get to America. I had such love for this place even before stepping foot on it. And we now have such division where two people don't talk to each other that have no reason to not be talking to each other.
Yeah.
The beauty of politics is that we disagree. Let's sit at the table. Let's talk about those things that we disagree on, and let's see if we could get to 50% agreement on those. You know, Bob Dole, who was my mentor, right, who I worked for, and this is where everything started, was great at bringing people from both parties to the table and finding solutions. And this is where I want to bring the Senate back to. I want to bring the Senate back to where we sit down and we could actually smile together on opposite sides of the aisle. And that's not what's happening now.
I'm convinced they smile behind the scenes and then they get in front of the cameras and they're like, I hate you and I hate you too. The media and social media has really been, because we all do, I would say most people agree on like 70 to 80% of issues. There's like a couple, you know, wedge issues, but media has been doing a horrible job at just pointing out that fact, but also at dividing us further. And social media just makes it easy to hate each other. So it's really hard to break through sort of those narratives. Have you had any interactions on the campaign trail with diehard Democrats who you were trying to break through to?
Yeah. I actually had a room full of them that said, I can't believe you want to open the Alaskan pipeline again. And I said the same thing to the Seattle Times. I said, look, for as long as we are dependent on oil in this country, I want to drill in this country where I know that the environmental laws are the best in the world. So if we care about the environment, we should be drilling here. And not trusting Venezuela or Russia or the Middle East that could care less about the environment. And you know what? The whole room said, wow.
Makes sense.
That makes sense. So you see, I mean, we can agree on issues that on the surface we so much disagree on. I think that we... I'll take that crusade to unite. I think that I will at least have one ally in the Senate, Larry Hogan. I think he's pretty moderate.
I like Larry, a great guy.
I think him and I will work together to bring people back to the middle. And I think that's where we should be. Don't get me wrong. You know, I have talked to other great senators, you know, in our party, that I met with in D.C. And I do think that at the end, we want what's best for America. And I believe that what's best for America is to end this division.
Yeah. And you have some agreement. You know, I think the border issue is a really good example of this. We're like, there should be the ability, you know, both sides say they want some of the same things, but they're completely incapable of actually coming to an agreement that isn't thwarted. I mean, Dreamers is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Like for years, both sides have been like, yeah, Dreamers should get citizenship. And then both sides will have full control in Congress and they'll not do it because they're using them as some sort of political football for this or that. I mean, how do you begin to try to crack that open? Because that's just how it's been. Like even completely like common sense, bipartisan issues, there's no movement on them.
I think we need to cut the nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to the border, I'll say very solemnly that every sovereign nation should have the right to vet who comes in and out of their country. If you don't know who's coming in and out of your country, then you're losing your sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is embarrassing for our government right now to be in a place where we don't know who comes in and out of our country, but the cartels know exactly mm-hmm. who comes in and out of our country. And a lot of those people owe them for coming into our country. So there comes crime or whatever these individuals have to do to pay back that debt, right? And we are allowing that to happen. It's we need more discipline and leadership at that border so we stay a sovereign nation. When it comes to Dreamers, you know, this is something that automatically should pass. If you were under 18 when you crossed that border into this country, it was not your decision to come to this country. Most of these individuals have private businesses now. They went to school. They have their families here. We should immediately grant them citizenship, and I will stand for no less than that. Now, the hard question is their parents, right? You were an adult. You made that decision to come into this country illegally. And for those, I do have a heart for those that have been here for 15 years or more, that have paid their taxes, that are working hard, that they are your neighbor. You may not even know that they're illegal.
Yeah.
But they've really tried to live like a very good citizen and a very good family in America and be American. And to those individuals, I do want them to stop looking over their shoulder that they're going to be deported. I would like them to have a path to legalization. And for me at this point would be permanent residency.
Mm.
I wouldn't give them citizenship because they did break the law.
Yeah.
Right? But I would put them in a place here where they could enjoy our country because they have been living as a good citizen. Now, those that want to commit crimes, they're out.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to the heart of Trump's mass deportation plan. To what extent would you support any sort of quote unquote mass deportation effort?
I probably would not.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that for practical reasons or ideological?
I think that, you know, to sit up there and say we're going to deport 18 million people mm-hmm. is a hard thing to accomplish.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's a lot of different aspects of it, as we have just talked about. How about the minors that now have been here and have a successful life? How about the people that have lived as a good citizen in this life, right? How do we separate that? I don't think it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I will be willing to sit at the table and discuss this in the Senate. What is the plan and what are we trying to accomplish? Are we bettering our country or not? Right, you know, a lot of farmers in Eastern Washington would tell you that they are dependent on some labor. That's why I'm a big proponent of H-2A and H-2B workers coming here from other countries. And that's actually legal.
Yeah.
Right. I would like to expand that program because it will really help our economy here in Washington. As far as mass deportation, I would put a hold on it and get to the table and talk about how exactly are we going to accomplish this to get rid of the people that actually don't belong in our country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Christopher Gadd would be alive if some sort of deportation had happened for
right.
the man who killed Trooper Gadd.
Right. Right. No, In that sense, I'm 100% supportive of it, right? Mm. If you're going to come in here and try to commit crimes and make us a worse country, you're out.
Yeah.
And there is no pleading. You're out, right? But what are we going to do with those people that have come, as I said, 10, 15 years ago and have lived a model life? They really tried to be American and supported our economy. So those I do have a big heart for.
Yeah, and it's also, is that feasible? We have barely any cops. Who's going to help the feds round people up? You know, Jeff's like, so there's like the idea, sure, I get it, but I don't know how you carry anything like that out. We have no cops left, you know? I'm assuming this is the last time we're going to have you in person, although I look forward to the debates and playing clips from the debates. I moderated the last debate with Maria Cantwell. I got to say, she was pretty boring. So if you need any tips, I've got you. What would be your pitch to voters who are truly on the fence for whatever reason in this race?
My pitch would be that we have a senator that has ran four times,
mm-hmm.
Asking the voters to give her another chance at making it right. And we still live in the conditions that we live, and it's getting worse every year. We have no leadership from the highest elected officials in this state, right? When I believe that when you try to take over a city, as they did in Seattle, when there's anarchy in the streets, the highest elected official in this state, even though you're a U.S. senator and this is a state issue, should have leadership and opinions.
You'd think.
And push our state leaders to do something about this, right? And that representation is lacking. What I want to offer the people of Washington is a choice. A choice from a person that is coming from science. A choice from a person that has been a leader for many, many years nationally, although in the medical profession. That has a different idea than the old political machine of listening to whoever gives you money and the PACs and the big corporations and everybody that you have to satisfy, and you forget that the people that get you there are the ones that you have to really represent.
Yeah.
When you're in that environment for so long, listening to your own echo chamber, you become more radical in your own ideas. And right now, I believe that the senators of this state are only representing their own ideology. They're not representing anyone else's. And I'm here to represent the people of Washington. And I'll sit with a Democrat and a Libertarian and a Republican and an Independent. And I will listen because they will add their ideology. And if you don't include the people being affected by a problem, your solution is faulty.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the example of the light rail that went all the way to Snohomish and $500 million over budget. Well, they forgot to talk about that.
Yeah.
When they proposed that. Mm-hmm. I bet that the people involved in it that are paying taxes towards that are not very happy that they weren't involved in the at the table. Even if you're going to do something, please involve the people that are affected by it. You may get them to buy in, but at least they're a part of the solution. And unfortunately, that's not what we have right now.
Yeah, I asked you at the beginning kind of what do you do in the final stretch. Are there key areas of the state that you're going to be spending more time in the next month?
Well, I live in Belltown these days.
Yeah.
I am in the streets of Seattle and pushing that message in King County. I would love for all our supporters all over the state to be our proxy where we can't be in all those other counties. We are going to seriously concentrate the last couple of months here, the last few weeks now in King County, because certainly is where the larger amount of voters come out, and the ones that we feel that we could turn hearts and minds into change, and we're actually giving them a good choice for change.